three players, Killian Hayes, Isaiah Stewart, and Hamidou Diallo. If you could add one thing or see one improvement in a very specific area of their game that you think would help them take a big step next season, what would that very specific talent or very specific department of improvement be? We'll talk about that in today's episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
What's the deal? Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast. Per usual, I'm your host, Kuka Hill. You can find me over on Twitter at Kuka Hill. I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. And if you haven't already, head to our YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. We're going for 5,000 subscribers before the season starts. We're at, I believe, 3.7K. We're on our road there. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel. It's the best way to support the podcast. Or if you listen to this on one of the podcast platforms, leave a 5-star review on whatever platform that is. That's another great way to support the podcast. Just for all of you guys who may not know already, we are down to 3 episodes a week for the next month or so until the season gets started and we start getting some more stuff going on. So again, if you guys start seeing some fewer episodes, wondering why you're not seeing the 5 days a week like you usually would see, it's because we're down to 3 episodes a week until we get some probably training camp preseason around there. But on today's episode, we're going to be talking about 3 players, Killian Hayes, Isaiah Stewart, and Hamidou Diallo. And I wanted to talk about a very specific part of each one of their games, not just simply, oh, improve shooting. Oh, improve, you know, be a better dribbler. Like, not something very, you know, broad. I want to get very specific with each one of the guys that I think if you added or improved something, one of those things, they would be a better player and they would take a much bigger step next season. And to do that with me, we brought host of the Pistons Pulse podcast, Bryce Simon, who's always on the podcast. Bryce, I appreciate you coming on, man. The person we're going to start with here is going to be Killian Hayes. And me and Bryce were talking about this a little bit before we get started. We got started, I have to say. I don't think me and him are going to have the same one at all. The only one I think that we might have the same pick for is Hamidou Diallo. So I'm interested to see where Bryce goes. But I'll let you go first, Bryce, with Killian Hayes. If you could pick one specific part of his game that you think would give him the biggest or would help him improve the most next year, where you'd see a big improvement from him, what would it be?
Yeah, so we were talking about this before, and I know you mentioned it in the intro. I didn't want to just say shooting. I didn't want to do any, like, skill, I guess what we normally think on the court. So actually what I said was I want Killian Hayes to improve his comfortability. Like how comfortable he is on the floor. And I think that that would go a long way. To me, he always looks unsure and uncomfortable. And he's like looking to the sideline, like, can I make this mistake? What's going to happen if I make this mistake? What happens if I don't pass? I remember back to his rookie year, I think we talked about he was playing with Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose. So he was always deferring to them and he wasn't comfortable. Like to me, he doesn't look comfortable, you know, playing with this team and this organization yet. So I think confidence also goes into that, but we've talked about that. So I wanted to find something new. So I just want to see Killian Hayes look comfortable on the floor. And I think that would help in all of his areas.
So I think that's actually a really interesting one. Because I actually was thinking about that the other day. And every single day, I go to the advanced box scores at NBA.com, and I end up just going through a bunch of games and watching a bunch of clips, whatever. And that was actually something I took away, too, that I started thinking back to his rookie season. I was like, you know, at first it was Jeremy Grant, Derrick Rose, and Blake Griffin. Then he gets hurt. He comes back, Jeremy Grant. Then this season, you got Cade, you got Jeremy, you got Sadiq now taking a bigger role. It just seems like that. If you go back to his scouting report coming from overseas, one of the things I've always heard people say about him over there is that basically the offense was his playground and he could go out there and he could do whatever he wanted. He could go out there and he just played so loose. And we haven't really seen that for him at all. It's a lot of it has to do with himself. Not, you know, he needs to get there mentally himself, but I do think that he probably, you know, he hasn't been dealt the best hands in that scenario. Everything else is completely on him. But I think that's something that probably could have helped him out. Probably if he had a different roster around him when he initially got to the league.
Well, and I think his role has changed, right? Like, he came in and he was the number 7 overall pick. He started right away. And so there was going to be this big role, but you could see he was still deferring to those guys. And then whenever two of those guys eventually moved on, now he was hurt coming back from the injury. So he probably thought, okay, going into year two, I get to be the guy. And the thing is, if the Pistons would have drafted somebody else, we may have seen that, right? If they would have drafted Jalen Green, Killian Hayes may have had the ball in his hands more. If they would have drafted Evan Mobley, he definitely would have had the ball in his hands more. And no way am I advocating for that. I obviously love the Pistons ended up with Cade Cunningham, but that completely flipped the script on everybody. You and I have talked about this through text before episodes. It flipped the script on Jeremy Grant, in our opinion, I think. I don't want to put words in your mouth,
yep.
But Cade Cunningham flipped the role for Jeremy Grant. And so maybe Killian finally got to spend an offseason knowing what his role is going to be for the upcoming season.
Okay, so, and just real quickly, it's funny because I have a friend who tells me that Cade Cunningham was the best thing that ever happened for the Detroit Pistons, but the worst possible thing to ever happen to Killian Hayes. That's what he always tells me.
There's some truth to it. Like, I mean, it completely changed what his role within the organization was going to be.
All right, so just wanted to throw that out there because he always says that to me every time we talk about the Pistons. And I at first, I was like, dude, take it easy. But I started to come around to his vision. All right, so the one I'm picking, there's one improvement in the area that I think could really help Killian take the next level next season. I know a lot of people focus on his finishing around the rim. That definitely would help a lot. That's a big thing. If he did that, that would help too. His outside shooting. He improved his outside shooting. That would help a lot too, obviously. I'm not going to pick either of those things. I'm not going to pick dribbling with his right hand or finishing with his right hand. I actually think one of the biggest reasons he struggled does what?
I was going to say the floater. Are you going with the floater?
Yep. How do you know? What the heck? How do you know? All right. Let me give my explanation first, and then you can tell me how you figured this out. And for those of you guys, the reason why I said what, Bryce is over here doing floating signs.
Even with my left.
I don't know how he anyways. The reason why I'm going to go with his floater, I feel like that actually is one of the biggest things that's betrayed him at the NBA level so far, is that for a guy, you know, if someone's struggling to get all the way to the rim and they're struggling to hit outside shots and guys are playing drop coverage against you or guys, you know, you're getting into the – I feel like Killian gets into the key but sometimes doesn't get all the way to the basket. And in that area, he settled for floaters and – It looks like that's something he wants to have a part of his game. It just seems like it's betrayed him. And it hasn't went down. This past season on all runners, according to Synergy, he ranked in the 30th percentile, which is below average. He had a 0.776 points per possession. So that's not very good at all. I feel like if Killian could have that in-between game to where he could consistently hit that floater from 5 to 9 feet from the rim, it would open up so many more things for him. He wouldn't have to worry about having to get all the way to the basket every single time. You wouldn't have to worry about having to finishing over bigger, taller, more athletic defenders all the time. Even though we want to see him improve that, he needs to improve that, and he needs to improve those areas because he also needs to get to the free throw line more. A counter to all that is that if he had a floater to his game, it probably would make everything else, besides the outside shooting. If he had a floater in his game that he was able to hit consistently, I feel like that would change everything for him offensively. It would make things so much easier for him. He would feel so much more confident when he gets guys on his back, when he gets into the restricted area. Because a lot of times, like Bryce said, not only is he uncomfortable, it just seems like he's unsure of himself when he gets in that area too. A lot of times it looks like he just wants to pass the ball. We saw him change that mentality a little bit at the end of the season. But if he could just add that floater to his game and he could become a pretty good floater to his game, I think that would really change a lot for him. He'd really take the next step offensively.
You know, as much as we talk about this team lacking shooting, I think that floater game would be a big development for a lot of players, right? Him, it's going to be a huge thing to watch for with Jaden Ivey. I even think the other two guys we're going to talk about on this episode, Hamidou Diallo, if he could add something like that with the way he gets into the lane. And even the reason I said floater coup is because I think it's something that every NBA player needs. Every guard needs it, but essentially every big needs it because that's the shot you end up taking in the little short roll. If you're pick and roll, somebody helps, you know, and then you shoot that little floater. Now you could shoot just a true jump shot also, that's fine. But I think that little 5 to 10 foot, I call it a push floater, whatever you want to call it. I think that that's something that every basketball player, I teach it to a bunch, like every one of my high school kids, we work on that when we're doing like individual skill development, 2 feet, little push shot, shoot it high, you know, with soft touch. And I just think it's such an important part for people to add to their game.
Yeah, especially for, I feel like, a primary guard or a primary ball handler too, that you just need that part of your game. If guys are going to give that to you, you have to be able to work in the in-between area. And Killian needs that desperately. I think it really would help his game. He'd really take the next step next season if he could add that to his game, because I think that would make it to where he would feel a lot more comfortable offensively. But also, Jaden Ivey, like you said, Jaden Ivey looks like he's going to really struggle in between in the in-between area. And a floater or a runner, whatever you want to call it, I think that would really help him as well. So that's where I'm going to pick with Killian. Bryce is going to go with comfortability and feeling more sure of himself. I went with the floater. Let me know what you guys would add to Killian's game that you think would really take him to the next level next season. Don't give us just some broad answer, oh, outside shooting or his right hand. Get a little bit more specific with it. Let us know in the comment section down below or over on Twitter at Kuka Hill. When we come back, we'll now go on to Isaiah Stewart. What would you add to his game? What do you think he needs to improve? The one specific detail of his game that you think would take him to another level next season. We'll talk about that when we come back. But first, I have to tell you guys about one of our sponsors, Built Bar. If you haven't tried a Built Bar Puffs yet, you are depriving yourself of one of life's greatest joys. And guess what? There's a brand new flavor as usual. Are you ready for it? It's delicious, indulgent cookie dough covered in chocolate. That's right. Built has done it again. It's a brand new flavor called Cookie Dough Chunk Puffs. It has a light and chewy texture, real cookie dough chunks, and of course, they're covered in 100% real chocolate. All the joys of eating cookie dough without the hassle of having to make it. Plus, it's very healthy for you. Cookie Dough Chunk Puffs are only 160 calories, and they have a whopping 15 grams of protein in them. Run to Built.com to snag a box for you and your family. It will be the perfect treat, or you can find a really good hiding place in your house and just hoard them to yourself, although I would not suggest doing that. Like all Built Bars, the new Cookie Dough Chunk Puff is covered in 100% real chocolate. That means they're healthy and tasty. Chocolate-covered cookie dough with a light, fluffy texture. They're absolutely amazing. You are going to love the new Cookie Dough Chunk Puff, whether you need a snack for your workout, a late-night treat, or just need to grab a quick bite. Built is the perfect protein bar, and they taste better than a candy bar, better than just about any bar out there. Ditch the calories, ditch the fat, ditch the sugar, grab yourself a Built Bar. Go to Built.com, use promo code LOCK15 and get 15% off your order. Again, go to Built.com, use promo code LOCK15 and get 15% off your order. That's Built Bar, the greatest protein bar ever. So I want to thank you guys again for making Lockdown Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. And if you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Lockdown Pistons. Hit that subscribe button. It's another great way to support the podcast, or you guys can leave us a five-star review on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. All right, Bryce, we're going to move on to Isaiah Stewart. What's a part of his game that you think if you could add or improve, whatever, moving into next season that would take him to the next level, what would it be?
Hey, real quick, make sure you spell Koo's last name correctly when you're looking him up on Twitter, because all of a sudden he's so big time now that he has fake accounts. There's like three spoof accounts of Koo out there.
There's three of them?
I don't know. There was at least two. I just saw him the other day. So make sure make sure you spell his last name correctly whenever you're looking this up. But Isaiah Stewart. So again, I wanted to find words that were not just like shot or, you know, something on the court. So I said in general, finesse. I think Isaiah Stewart needs to add finesse to his game. And I think this is the one that Detroit Pistons fans are not going to be happy with me, because it's like, no, this is what Detroit basketball is. Stu embodies all of that, and I get it. But if we want to get the best version of Isaiah Stewart, I think he needs to add some finesse, especially to his offensive game. Defensively, he kind of has that, right? With like the switchability and all that. But offensively, if he can add that word in a multitude of ways, whether it's the shot, pick and roll, whatever it is, I think that that would really help his game.
All right. So the one I went with for Isaiah Stewart is, and you can use this in multiple areas, but I'm going to specify in one area, his touch around the basket.
Okay.
I think his touch around the basket this past season was, you know, without sugarcoating, straight up just awful. It was not very good at all around the basket. According to Synergy, he ranked in the 24th percentile as a big man, 24th percentile around the basket on non-post-ups. And it really hurt him on offensive rebounds too, because he gets a few offensive rebounds, but he was one of the worst finishers off offensive rebounds in the entire NBA. He ranked in the 13th percentile in putbacks.
Wow.
And that was his most used play type, too. He had 150 possessions on putbacks. The next closest one was cuts on 116 possessions. So for that to be your main archetype, your main play type, what you do the majority of the time, and you are one of the worst at capitalizing on it, that's really bad. So I feel like if he could add touch around the basket, it really would help him. And not even just touch around the basket, touch on the floor in general, just touch on his jump shot, his free throws around the basket, all that. I think that would really help him take his game to the next level. I know we've talked about Isaiah Stewart shooting nonstop. The outside shot, we're going to get to see it. We're going to see if it's legit or not. But listen, this is the hard thing about it, is that one of his, you know, I guess you could say his best assets is the fact that he's a good offensive rebounder. You don't, if you're having him just shoot a bunch of threes, you're kind of taking him away from that. But then the counter argument is, yeah, he's good at offensive rebounds, but he's awful at putting the ball back in off the offensive rebound. So is the value, would he bring more value at simply hitting 33% from three than he would on getting an offensive rebound missing over and over? I don't know. But if he's that good, if he, through 2 years, he looks pretty good at getting offensive rebounds. If he could simply improve on his touch around the rim and be able to finish off some of those, I think he would look a lot better offensively. I think you actually would rather have him still around the basket then. The problem is, and this is the dilemma you find yourself in with Isaiah Stewart offensively, is that, okay, well, he's like Bryce just said, he's physical around the rim. He gets offensive rebounds. But when he gets the offensive rebounds, he can't put the ball back in the basket. He misses a ton. He's one of the worst finishers on putbacks. Okay, well, we're going to have him shoot outside. Well, we don't know if he can actually shoot outside. And if you're doing that, you're taking away from probably his best asset, which is offensive rebounding. So it's like it's tough to figure out. It's like what goes on here. So I'm going to go ahead and say that, no, it's not the outside shot. If he could simply be a better finisher or have better touch around the rim, we probably aren't talking about him as much with he absolutely needs an outside shot if that was the case.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. When people wonder why they're so adamant and why, like me as a fan, have bought into his three-point shooting and him developing it, those numbers you just outlined are why. It's because you got to put him somewhere as a big, and he can't set a highway screen, what we call a highway screen. I don't know, you know, I get, there's probably not any non-Pistons fans listening, but essentially where he sets a screen so Cade Cunningham, Killian can get all the way to the basket in the pick and roll. He can't do that every time, Coop. Like, sometimes he has to be a lob threat. Sometimes he's got to be able to be in the dunker spot. And if he can't do those at a high rate, then he's got to be able to space the floor. Like, you got to be able to do one of those things. And so that's why the three-point shooting is important. And so I think we're in the same page here. He's got to find something. Is it the three-point shot? Is it this touch around the basket? Because if he has that, then you can leave him in the dunker spot. And he can just clean up the trash and just thrive with offensive rebounds, dump-offs, and those things. You know, and then I'll take it further with the finesse. If he's going to play on the perimeter, and this is steps, but he's got to be able to be in the DHO. He's got to be able to pass out of the DHO. He's got to be able to pass out of a short roll or a pick and pop and then drive. So I think he's in a weird spot of which path is he going to take, right? Is he going to become this like perimeter oriented big, or is he better off staying down in the paint and offensive rebounds, those things? Which do you have more confidence in? I think it's a tough philosophical question of which is easier to improve upon.
I think I have to say at this point, it's the outside shot simply because it's the unknown. It's the one that we don't know yet. Cause I know he can't finish around the rim right now. Like I've seen it. I can see that he can't do it. He's undersized. He doesn't have athleticism. It's hard for him to finish over guys, and his touch around the rim just didn't look very good at all last year. So at least with the unknown of his outside shot and the few stretches at the end of the season, the last 2 years where he's, you know, taken like two or three a game, the first year was a little bit of mixed results. This past year was really good for the last, it was like 6-5 games, whatever. He looked really good doing it. At least you have that in your back pocket. So I'd have to pick that. But to add on to your finesse, one of the ways I describe it is, and I hope a lot of people can understand this, it's like he needs oil. It's like you have to put oil around, like, on him, because he's just so, like, what's the word? Like, tight. He's just so, like, clunked up. Like he needs to let himself go a little bit. He has to like get a little flexible. Like even in the short roll, like in the in summer league when he made some of those short roll passes that we pointed out in the podcast, he still looked like a little stiff is the best word I'm looking for. He just looks stiff doing it. He has to get more finesse to it. I agree with that. I think that's a really good one to point out because it goes not only defensively but around the basket, offensively, outside, offensively. So I think that's a really good one. But like I said, I'm going to go with the touch around the basket because it really does. It puts you in a position if you're the Pistons, not even just Isaiah Stewart. If you're the Pistons, you're Troy Weaver looking at Isaiah Stewart. You're Dwayne Casey looking at Isaiah Stewart. You're like, listen, we don't know. Like, we know you bring us value defensively, but it's so like offensively, you're just like a contradict yourself because you're good offensive putbacks. I mean, good at offensive rebounds, but you can't put the ball back. If we take you outside, then you can't do what you're best at. We're not even sure if you're good at the outside shot. If you're just how good would you have to be at the outside shot to make up for the fact now you're not giving us second chance points or second chance opportunities? Or heck, maybe the one we should be picking is better decision making on his offensive putbacks. Maybe it's he should get these offensive rebounds and kick the ball out instead of trying to finish it. Maybe that's it. But he has to find something around there. I'm going to go with the touch around the rim.
I want to push back just a little bit, you weren't the first one that's probably – he can still be an impact on the offensive boards even if he's playing at the three-point line. Like, you just have to be really good at anticipating. And I'm sorry if you can hear my three-year-old screaming in the background.
This is
one of the drawbacks of recording at home now. But, you know, if he's in the corner and you know, okay, Cade's going to take this shot or – you know, whatever it is, you learn your teammates and you know when they're going to take a shot, when they're going to turn it down. You can be good at coming into off. And sometimes it's harder to box somebody out coming in from the 3-point line than if they were in the dunker spot on the block or what it may be. So it would take more energy and effort, but I don't think we're going to question that from Isaiah Stewart, right? So I think he still can be an effective offensive rebounder. The only place he probably wouldn't is like a pick and pop, and then he's at the top of the key, and maybe he needs to be the safety guy or whatever. But I still think he can be effective and in some ways more effective because it's so hard to box somebody out coming in from the 3-point line.
Well, okay, we can go back and forth real quick about this. So my pushback then to that statement is I would agree with that if we were talking about a finesse player or a more athletic player. I feel like the reason why Isaiah Stewart is so good at offensive rebounds is because he's able, when you're already down there, like you mentioned earlier, he's just so physical. Guys usually don't want to get that physical with them. Guys don't want to get that, you know, body to body, get pushed around a lot. They'll just let him push him around. And then he doesn't have to jump high. He doesn't have to try out athlete a guy. He just simply uses his power and physicality to just get offensive rebound, and then the finesse and athletic part that comes up after getting the rebounds where he struggles at. So I don't know if I would push back. I think me and Bryce will see how this one goes this upcoming season. Because I don't know. I think the reason why he's so good offensive rebound is because he's allowed to use his physicality around the rim. I don't know if he's going to be able to use that physicality just coming straight down crashing. I feel like that's more of a athletic finesse kind of thing that players do.
What it would cause is it wouldn't make the finishing any easier, right? I still don't think he's going to get boxed out because I've watched enough film on NBA and you know, I brought this up with Jalen Duren. I just don't think guys will box him out. Like, I think he'll just simply outwork them. They'll forget about him standing out there at the three-point line when the shot goes up, and he's just going to outwork them. But, yes, it's going to take a little bit more athleticism to get in there. Now, you know, find the ball, jump, come down with it, now finish. All of those things. I'm saying I don't think it would have to eliminate how many offensive rebounds he gets, because if you're willing to run in from the 3-point line on offense, you know, you can still get a bunch of offensive boards. So it will be interesting. I'm interested to see how much they play into this, like how much he is quote unquote in the corner or pick and popping, and then how much it does affect his in the paint, offensive boards, those things.
And one of the other things I wonder about is that of these 150 possessions of offensive putbacks, how many of those are like his little one-hand tip ones where he's just like he's kind of being boxed out. He just like pokes the ball at the rim. And, you know, he's not really getting
control
of the basketball.
They definitely count
those, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So how many of those, like, should we really be holding those ones against him or for him? I don't know. So I wonder how much of that actually impacts it.
Yeah, stats are interesting. As I've done just like the box score watching, like you're talking about with Synergy, some of the stuff they count as assists, some of the stuff that end up as turnovers, steals, like who they give credit for some of that stuff. It's not enough to really skew the data, but it's enough that you're like, man, that's like five times where that wasn't a turnover on Cade. That was an awful pass. There's no way he could have, you know, stuff like that. So there is a little bit of nuance, especially if you have a smaller sample size, if you're just looking at a 5-game stretch or a 10-game stretch.
Fair enough. All right. Let me know what you guys think. What was the one part of Isaiah Stewart's game that you guys would like to see either added or simply improved on, a very specific part that you think could take his game to the next level next season? I say his touch around the rim and touch overall. Bryce says his finesse and being able to, you know, like I say, not be so tight all the time. Let us know what you guys would say in the comment section down below or over on Twitter at Kuka Hill. When we come back, we'll do Hamidou Diallo. What's one part of his game that we think, if you added to or he simply improved on one very specific part, what part would actually take him to another level next season? We'll talk about that when we come back. But first, you guys got to hear from some of our lovely sponsors. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. And if you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. Hit that subscribe button. It's the best way to support the podcast. Or if you listen to this on one of the podcast platforms, leave us a 5-star review. That's another great way to support the podcast. All right, Bryce, we've done Killian Hayes. We've done Isaiah Stewart. And we probably could have done a couple other players. I didn't want to pick one of the, by the way, for all you guys still listening, I didn't want to pick one of like the better players in the team, like Cade or Sadiq or anything, because I feel like that's a little bit boring, because I feel like we talk about them all the time. I want to take some of the lower key guys that have a lot of things to improve on. But if you had to just pick one thing to improve on, you think that would really help them the most next year, like Cade, I don't feel like he has as much to improve on as all these other guys. Same thing with Sadiq. Maybe we could have done Jaden Ivey or something based off his college season, but I'm not really going to do that because we haven't seen him in the NBA yet. So that's why I picked these three guys.
Before we get to Hunt, what's the one statistical area you would like to see Cade improve upon?
Just a statistical area?
Yeah, just like, is it three-point shooting, free throw attempts, the turnovers, more assists? What would be like the one thing?
Three-point shooting, really broad.
I think a lot of people like would say turnovers, and I'm like, I don't know that I care about his turnovers with his usage. Like, he's probably going to average somewhere near those turnovers. I wish they were different ones. He has a lot of turnovers. I'm like, man, Cade, you're too smart for that. But I think it would be the just overall efficiency, especially from 3-point. So I was just curious, like, because I do know I get turnovers quite a bit whenever I talk to people about that.
Yeah, turnovers, I'm not really concerned about it. Any high usage guard besides, like, I don't know, CP3. You're going to get like a ton of turnovers. Like LeBron's what? Like top 10 turnovers all time, top 5 already.
Curry always does. Like Curry turnovers. Luka has turnovers. They all turn the ball over. Like, you're going to, again, some of the ones that he has, you're like, you're better than that, but he was just a rookie, so he was still learning.
Mm-hmm.
Away from Hami, sorry.
No, go ahead. So Diallo, what was the one part of his game that you would want to add to or see improve that you think would give him the biggest step next season?
And again,
I think this is the one that we might agree on this one. I don't know, but we'll see.
I went with just tried to find one word for all of these guys. His was the easiest, and I just said awareness, like his basketball awareness. And I think it's on both ends of the court. Coup, he would be really, really good. We've talked about the defensive awareness, but even offensive awareness. I do think there's times Hamidou Diallo is the one that's messing up sets. Whenever we're texting each other, like, what did Dwayne Casey just draw up after timeout? And I'm like, man, I think maybe Hami went to the wrong spot. You can see people pointing at him, you know. And then also along with awareness is decision-making. He can get to the lane. His athleticism gets him to the lane, but then he doesn't always see the open teammate or what the right decision is. So if he could improve his all-around awareness, and including what would happen on the defensive end, man, you have yourself a player all of a sudden.
So I think awareness – it kind of ties in the one I said. Okay. But I went a different way of saying it, a more funny way of saying it. And it kind of has a little other things to do with it too. But I said he has to improve at just calming down.
Yeah.
He just has to calm down.
Yeah.
Because one of the main things, the main way we describe Hamidou Diallo on the podcast, I call him a ball of fire. Nonstop. He's just a nonstop ball of fire, literally from the coaching tree of Russell Westbrook. The player tree of Russell Westbrook. They're just nonstop gas to the pedal, just always 100 speed, never calms down. And certain situations, it works. It works when your team's like playing lousy out there. There's not everyone else on the floor isn't giving it their all, or they're not playing, you know, loose, whatever. And then Diallo can come in and he just sparks a run and he sparks the team and you can ride that in a game. But consistently, you cannot do that. Consistently, you cannot be 100 nonstop on both sides of the floor, just straight up using your athleticism only and just trying to just disrupt everything nonstop. And sometimes, or I would even argue most of the time, it disrupts your own team because of how much you're trying to disrupt everything nonstop. So I think the main thing he has to do is just calm the hell down. Know how to, and maybe I should say, the better one should have said, pick his spots better. He needs to know when to try to disrupt things, when he should try to, you know, unleash that ball of fire and just, you know, just go crazy all over. He needs to know when to do that and know how to, when he's not doing that, survive as a player within a system. Because right now, I feel like his biggest thing, I think that kind of goes back to awareness. I basically feel like we're describing the same thing, really. But I feel like his biggest issue is that he can't survive in a structured space. He can't survive in that. He can't survive in sets. He can't survive in a structured atmosphere. He thrives in chaos. Like, he is literally Heath Ledger's Joker. He is an agent of chaos, and that's all he does.
The best Batman movie of all time.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. That Joker right there. I'm trying to get a tattoo right here, everybody. I'm trying to get a tattoo right here. Why so serious? That's what I'm trying to do, but I have to try to convince Megan to let me do it. But either way.
let him do it, Megan.
That's basically what Diallo is. He's literally just an agent of chaos, and that's how he thrives. So if he could just find a way to calm down and thrive in a structured setting, he would be a much better player. But he struggles so much at being in a structured setting that it's hard to play him a lot of times. And I think that basically we're describing awareness, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that is self-awareness, right? Like him being aware of how fast he's going and spatial awareness, seeing what's there and what's not. You know, I couldn't help but think, you know, all these pro leagues that are going on, I just think like Hamidou Diallo might be the best Detroit Piston to go play in a pro league.
Like I said this like a few weeks ago when we had that podcast. I don't know if you were on the podcast that guest episode, but I literally made a podcast when everyone started. I think it was when LeBron went down to the Drew League, whatever. Oh, yeah. I said, which Piston would be the most fun to watch? I said Hamidou Diallo by far. He would thrive in that setting. That's literally him.
Our next draft should be Pistons current roster, and then we just draft our best pickup like outdoor
pickup three team.
Best pickup team or something like that. Here, in all seriousness, where that concerns you, and not for the Pistons right now. I think we've talked about this a little bit with Marvin Bagley III as well, but you can't ever play a guy like that in the playoffs, Koo, no matter how good he is in the regular season. And you need good regular season players, right? You can have him as your 10th, 11th guy, help you win games in the regular season, and then you cut your rotation down to 8 or 9 in the playoffs. And that's okay. You need those guys. But that's the problem is you can't play them in crunch time. You can't play them in playoffs because they just can't slow down and focus and see the things and make the things happen that need to be happened when the game does slow down. And I know Hamidou Diallo is only 24, Koo, but I wonder if you ever improve upon that type of, if we want to call it a skill or not skill or whatever it is. Like, I think it's hard for players to slow down and do that and learn change of pace. I'm not saying he can't. I just think it's really hard to do. He's been playing basketball for over a decade. This is who he is, and it's hard to change that.
Well, I think where it comes from, it's one, he's hyper-athletic. He's one of the best athletes in the NBA. Yep. And he knows he can just out-athlete people, and he uses that a lot of time to achieve things. So that's a part of it, obviously, one. But two, I think it really comes from the fact that his skill set, he struggles. He struggles in a lot of areas, and that's basically his way to thrive. Like, because he's not a good enough shooter to just thrive and catch and shoots. He's not a good enough, you know, on-ball player. With, you know, I think actually on ball, he's actually pretty good getting to the rim whenever he wants. It's hard to stop him getting to the rim, but you can't have that if he doesn't have decision making, knowing when to shoot, when to pass, etc. And he really struggles in that department too. So it's like, I feel like if his skill set was improved, this would be a lesser issue. But this is basically his best skill, and it's going to be what gets him on the floor. It's going to be what helps him play the best because he can't do the other things. So I feel like that's where it really comes from. Like if Diallo, through his 4 years in the NBA, went from a six, like his rookie season, he shot 16% from deep. If you went from a 16% shooter from deep to a 35% shooter from deep, I don't think we have it. I think this still happens. It still pops up every now and then. That's fine. But it's not like a main, it's not like a main issue with him still. It's one of those things like, oh, well, that's just Hamidou. You're going to have to live with that because he gives you so many other good things. Right now, it's, well, that's all Hamidou gives you. He doesn't really give you anything else. We can't have that all the time. I think that's where the problem comes from, and that's why it's such an issue with him.
We talked about this on the Twitter spaces on Wednesday, Koo. Like, I don't know where the minutes are going to come for Hamidou. This is going to be really interesting. We talked about it the last time I recorded Locked On with you about Kojo and KO and Nerlens Noel and treating guys the right way and taking care of them and those guys being vets. Well, you brought it up in the spaces. You know, last year at the beginning of the season, him and Dwayne Casey had some sort of altercation. You know, it was kept pretty quiet. You know, respect to the organization for keeping it relatively quiet for what it was, but he doesn't seem like a kid that's going to be happy not playing, and I can understand that. But where's – we talked about it before the episode. He's not in either of our two deep depth charts right now. And that doesn't mean Casey may not play 11 or 12 guys, but I don't know that I want to see 11 or 12 guys because then the guys I want to see playing aren't getting the minutes that I think they need. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see what his role is on this team. He'll get his chances. I just wonder when and where they come.
You know, we'll wrap up the podcast with this right here. I was actually thinking about this. And I was trying to figure out ways. Okay, how can we – I think Isaiah Livers has to play. I think he's going to play. I don't think he's taking Isaiah Livers' spot. So I was thinking to myself, okay, how can we make this happen? How can we fit Diallo into the rotation if they really wanted him to? And the only solution I've come up with, and it's actually something that I've suggested throughout the offseason a little bit, once the trades happen, actually, let's not say throughout the entire offseason, but once the trades happened with the Knicks and they picked up his option – if they were to actually trade Olynyk, and I don't right now they're one player over the roster size, so someone has to go nonetheless. It might be just waving Saven Lee, but someone has to go. So if they were to trade Olynyk, and then if they really want to find a way to play Duren, which they may or may not, who knows what they're thinking. We don't know what they're thinking right now. But if they want to play Duren and Noel's in the way, then they trade Noel and Kelly Olynyk. You let Duren be the backup five. You play Livers at the four, and then Diallo plays your backup three. I think that's the only way I can see it working with this team right now. Because right now, I'll just throw out a hypothetical starting lineup. You got Cade, Ivy, Bay, Stu, Bagley. And then off the bench, I got Killian, Burks, Livers, Olynyk, Noel. So if you take away two of those guys, Olynyk, Noel, Durham fills in the five. Livers slides up to the four, which he's capable of doing, I think. And then you slot in Hamidou Diallo at the three. So I think that's his only chance. And maybe they do that. Because, again, they do need to clear one roster spot. So I don't know. That's the only way I can see it happening right now, though.
I know Kyle has talked about some teams that had a TPE that Olynyk could fit in. But I don't remember the teams off the top of my head. So I think there are some teams out there that you could trade KO to and not bring a player back. You know, maybe it's just a pick. You know, like one of those, like the second rounder the Pistons traded off in the Kemba Walker deal. So that second unit is fun, and I think you have maybe just enough spacing with Killian, Burks, Hami, Livers, and Duren. So Burks and Livers can obviously space the floor there. Duren as your pick-and-roll guy. I've advocated for actually trying Hami in the dunker spot or in the pick-and-roll, short roll, like almost like the Gary Payton II thing with the Golden State Warriors, the way they used him in the playoffs. I've advocated to try Hami in those situations. So I think that lineup could be a little bit questionable with shooting, but I think I would mess with it. I would watch that second unit. I think it'd be fun to watch. I think defensively you'd be fine. You have another ball handler in Burks to help out Killian Hayes. I like that.
And with that lineup, we've kind of went off the rails with what the podcast is trying to talk about, but just keep going with this. In that lineup, one of the things I really want Dwayne Casey to add to the offensive play set, if he's going to play Diallo, and they use Diallo like this in OKC, they use Andre Roberson like this in OKC, and they use Grant like this, Jeremy Grant, when he was in OKC. I don't know if it was Billy Donovan or who was the coach before Billy Donovan. He went on to coach the Wizards. Scott Brooks.
Oh, Scott Brooks,
It was either Scott Brooks or Billy Donovan. I don't know which one it was, but they would have they would run a high pick and roll, which I think you could run with Duren and Killian. You have the guys on either each wing spotting up the shooters, Burks and Livers, or you have them on one side, Burks and Livers. on one side, and then you have the hyper-athletic dude in the corner. And as you run that pick and roll to his left, you have an action where that guy in the corner that's still with leg, you just have him cut right down to the basket as you're doing it. And you just throw a lob to him. Either you got an open layup at the rim for Killing coming off the pick and roll, you got a lob to the roller, you got a bounce pass to the roller, or you have the one of the most athletic guys in the league running down from the corner with usually if you're running a pick and roll from the top of the key, a heavy set on the left side of the floor with the shooters, the guy on the weak side is going to be tagging down the defender. So he's going to be tagging down. He's probably not going to see most of the time the guy cutting straight down from the corner. You just lob it right over his head. And as long as Diallo gets his hands on it, he's probably going to finish it. So that's something I've really been wanting Dwayne Casey to add since they got Diallo. They haven't done it, but I think they're going to, probably not. But I think it would be a great way to utilize him.
Yeah, and so that's essentially kind of what I'm talking about with the dunker spot. Maybe you have to have him out in the corner. And the other thing is you can hit Duren on the short roll, and then Duren's a good enough passer, then he can throw the pass if that's the way it plays out. I wonder if Jaden Ivey being on the roster actually helps Hami, because you want to keep consistency within your sets for your first team, your second team, et cetera. So they're going to have to do maybe not that exactly, but getting Jaden Ivey downhill off pin downs and those type of things. Maybe then when the second unit comes in, it can be Hamidou Diallo, running the Jaden Ivey role from what the first team ran. So, maybe there is a role for him. I hope there is. I was super excited about him last season. The athleticism, the energy he plays with provides value. I'm like you. I think guys are going to have to get moved to open up minutes for him.
Exactly. All right. Well, we'll wrap up the podcast right there. We gave you guys three players, Killian, Isaiah Stewart, and Hamidou Diallo. We added one part to their game that we believe would help take their game to the next level next season. If you guys agree with us, let us know down in the comment section down below or over on Twitter at Cooper Hill, or you can tweet Bryce at Motor City Hoops. Or if you guys have a different one, let us know the same ways. Over on Twitter or in the comment section down below. Thank you guys for making Lockdown Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to our YouTube channel, hit that subscribe button on our way to 5,000 subscribers. Or if you listen to us on one of the podcast platforms, leave a 5-star review. I appreciate you guys. Make sure you guys go check out Bryce's podcast with Omari Sankofa II, The Pistons Pulse, every Tuesday. Make that your second listen every Tuesday. You keep Lockdown Pistons number one listen. But either way, thank you, Bryce, for coming on, man. Always fun. Let me know what your guys' thoughts are in the comment section down below. And until next time, I'll see you guys later. Peace out, everybody.